Welcome to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. A major canal project is proposed in Logan. It would divert water from the first dam to flow to residents in Logan, North Logan, and Hyde Park. Proponents of the project say that the current system isn't efficient enough in getting water to those towns. Critics are worried about that diverting this water would diminish the Little Logan River and that it would be better to let the water flow on to the Bear River and ultimately to the Great Salt Lake. And a while back, we talked to critics of the project. Today, we're going to be talking with project proponents. So we bring in Gordon Colson, who's president of Crockett Avenue Irrigation Company. Gordon Colson, thank you for coming in.
Thanks for the invitation and the chance to bring about our side.
Nathan Daugs is with us as well, manager of the Cache Water District. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Tom, for having us. We're happy to get some facts out there and let the public know what this project entails and the benefits of it.
Gordon Colson, tell me about this area with the Little Logan River. The main channel of the Logan River comes out, but the Little Logan River is separate for a while.
Yes. Where we currently divert our water from the main channel of the Logan River, we have come to find out that it is considered part of the Little Logan River by the State of Utah Office of Engineers. And for the 35 years that I've been associated with the company, it's been modified so much that it's been the canal system. That's as much as I've known. So I've learned from this process as well. We are planning to maintain the current flows and channel positioning of the Little Logan that many are concerned about.
Well, let me take that up right now. That is a concern of critics of the project. They are saying that there's a big probability that flows would be greatly reduced.
As of yesterday, there was we checked the flows through Merlin Olson Park, and there was, as close as we can measure, there was 4.9 CFS that was flowing through there. That is our normal. Well, when our water supply is as it is, which is less than what we usually have, but the normal flow that goes through there is up to 10 CFS, but right now it's at 5 just because there's not that much water to fill the ditch with. But it is part of the Logan Island Irrigation Company, and some of our concerns that people have been with had with is that we're willing to supply 10 CFS at the head gates where our canal system and where the Little Logan River will start to there, and then through seepage. And right now, currently, there we have users that use it and pump out of that or divert it separately from that channel, so it diminishes as it goes down through the parks and through the city and down through the fairgrounds and on down through farm fields, and then does return back to the Logan River.
I'm reading a story from the Salt Lake Tribune, a Brock Marchand story, quoting this. Currently, state data shows the river is flowing at 70 CPS where it crosses Riverside Drive. You measured at Merlin Olson, I guess.
Yes.
It's depleted a bit by then. And I guess this time of year, it's overall depleted or down?
Well, our main diversion as of yesterday was like 50 CFS instead of 70. Mm. The river levels have dropped that much. And we only have a share. We are regulated by the Kimball Decree that makes sure that everyone that uses water that comes from the Logan River, that we all get our share of it, but we don't overshare as well. So as of today, our flows have diminished from when that interview was done. It's dropped. Our share has dropped from 70 to 50. And the main channel, the largest part of the Little Logan is a diversion of our main channel. It's a very intertwined system between what is man-made sections and what is somewhat natural channel.
So Nathan Dougs, let me ask you a similar question here. I think one of the very biggest objections or worries of the critics of the project is that flows will be greatly reduced in the Little Logan River. What can you tell us about that?
So I think that's one of the maybe misconceptions, and I'll go back a little bit to our first round of public comments, which was almost 4 years ago when the project was kind of kicking off. And at that time, leaving water in the Little Logan was not part of one of the alternatives. We received just under 900 public comments, and a large portion of those were related to the public parks, the fairgrounds, and the public's access to the Little Logan. And so we incorporated that into the project, as well as leaving additional flow in the Logan River itself to meet beneficial environmental needs that the Logan River doesn't currently meet in years like this. But then leaving that up to 10 CFS in the Little Logan through its entirety. And we put the up to because, as Gordon said, as the river flows diminish on these dry years, diversions out of the Logan River are regulated by the Kimball Decree, and those get cut based on that decree, you know, and so that's what we're following in that part. And in portions of the Little Logan, there will be large reductions, right? Riverside Park, Jen Johansson, some of those first parks where the whole diversion is in the Little Logan at that portion are going to see bigger reductions. But then there's a Y at roughly 4th East, 5th East, where most of the water goes north at that point. The rest goes south and stays in the Little Logan Channel, and that's what you see through Merlin Olson Park, and then towards the end of it, the fairgrounds and Willow Park. And as Gordon said, currently there's 5 CFS in Merlin Olson Park. Earlier this summer, there was about 9, and that's where it goes most years. You know, some of the opponents have said, well, you know, there's 70 CFS flowing through the Little Logan. If we put 70 CFS through Merlin Olson Park, we would flood hundreds of homes. If we put much more than 10 or 15 through there, we would flood homes. But the bigger pinch point is at the end of the system. So currently at the fairgrounds, there's about 9 CFS coming into the fairgrounds. And if you're familiar with the Little Logan there, right by the Burger Shack, there's a diversion in the Little Logan. And the majority of that 9 CFS, about 6.5 right now, is being diverted by a canal company west. The other 2.5 CFS is going through Willow Park and staying in the Little Logan until it meets the confluence of the Logan River west of the Willow Lakes subdivision. If we were to run that full even 9 CFS that's in there today and leave it all in the Little Logan, that channel can't handle that much flow as it goes through people's backyards. And we would risk flooding homes even with the current setup. And so that's where that number came from, is we can't leave 20 CFS through the whole system and then pump it back because the channel can't handle those bigger flows. But if you go to Merlin Olson Park today with that 5 CFS, you'll see kids playing in there. And Gordon mentioned a little bit about the Division of Water Rights doing a determination on which sections of the Little Logan would require stream alteration permits, essentially which ones are still considered a stream and which sections are not. Merlin Olson Park is not regulated under state stream alteration permitting requirements. So if this project were to go in and that 4 or 5 CFS on a dry year like this is in there and we wanted more area for kids to float and play, we could alter that stream, build a check structure at the west side of Merlin Olson Park so it ponds a little deeper, and actually have more water to float in there than we've ever had before. And so there's things we can do, although there'll be diminished flows in some areas, the bigger, at least as I drive those parks regularly to see where there's their use, they're all being used. But Merlin Olson Park and the fairgrounds by far have the biggest use. That, you know, there's probably 10 carloads of kids at the fairgrounds every day playing in that Little Logan there. And so those flows in those areas are going to stay similar to what they are now. There will be other parks where the flows will be reduced, but the higher use public parks will have still pretty much the same flow. So there's a statement out there that channel is going to be dry 1 out of 4 years if this project goes forward. There has never been a flow yet in the Logan River that would require the Kimball Decree to where, say, you could have zero diversion. And so not to say it couldn't happen, right? We could have a worse drought year than this or the one we had in 2021 where those flows get low enough where the water's not there to divert because we're we're obligating 25 CFS in the Logan River. So if Crockett's water right that year, because of Kimball Decree, got below 30 CFS at that point, then there may not be water to divert through the Little Logan. But so far, we haven't got there. The driest year we had, 2021, 2022, I think they got down to 40 CFS or 44. Yeah. Right, so we haven't hit that yet to where those channels would be dry. We hope we never get there with a drought year, but we work really closely with the Logan River Observatory and the gauging stations they have on the Logan River, and that's where the 25 CFS came up with there, because we can meet all the environmental needs of 13 miles of river that currently don't meet their beneficial use of a cold water fishery. With 25 CFS additional, we can meet those benefits on the Logan River itself.
So if I just summarize what you're saying, you can correct me if I get it wrong. For extensive stretches, and especially through those popular parks, the levels would be about the same
They'll be pretty similar, yep.
And then you said that it might be reductions in the main channel of the Little Logan River.
Yeah, right.
So how much of a reduction do you think?
So that depends on, again, the time of year. So early in the year, you know, I think when Crockett started diverting this year, they were probably diverting 80-something CFS.
Yes.
So through Riverside Park, Jen Johansson, there was 80 CFS flowing there, right? If this project goes in at that time, that would go to 10 CFS through those areas. Okay. So those areas, we'll see a big reduction. But as you get further down in the system, the rest of the system is going to stay pretty similar.
We'll get into some of the other ins and outs of this. I just want, I guess, both of you gentlemen to tell me about the overall project, the why of it, right, and what's going to be happening if this is approved. So, Gordon Colson, what do you want to do with this project?
One of the main things for the main processes of the, doing this is to offer secondary water to more of the traditional area that these canals have serviced. I mean, these canals they were first dug in 1860 and served the island area, but then it expanded in 1911 as to where the channels were dug from out to service sections of North Logan and Hyde Park and the northwest sections of the northwest and southwest sections of Logan and Cache County. And also a fair amount of our water goes clear to Benson and services all the farm out there. But as houses have grown where fields used to be and cows and that were, then it's been easier for the residents to use culinary water for their system, for their irrigations, for, you know, lawns, yards, gardens, and those kind of things. But we want to offer secondary water, because as the housing grows, then the culinary needs are increase. And one of the things that the cities have asked us to do is to help it so they don't have to upsize and increase all of their culinary treatment stuff. So their plants and that can, you know, they can put that off for 50, 60 years before they have to really upgrade and upsize. And it depends on the city. Logan is in good shape, quite good shape with the system that they have, and with the addition of the new reservoir, the water tank reservoir that they've installed. It puts them in a better place, but North Logan and Hyde Park are quite strapped for water. And if they can use the secondary water outside of the house, that greatly enhances what they can provide inside the house. And that's what we're trying to do, and make it an economical benefit for them as well.
Nathan Dougs, anything you'd like to add to that?
Maybe two things related to the irrigation side of it. So part of the problem is, as Gordon stated, some of these canals are over 150 years old. And back when they were built, it was real easy to go along those canal banks and maintain those canals, right? Most canal companies drive their canals once a year, every other year, clean them out with a backhoe, make sure they're operating properly. As development has happened throughout these three cities, there's really no access for the canal company to maintain their canals. And so it's been decades of walking those canals in between roads and hauling debris out. Every now and then you can get a little mini excavator in there to take a down tree or something out. But to be able to maintain these canals is becoming almost impossible. And that becomes a safety risk and a liability for the canal companies. And so that's another aspect of wanting to pressurize these and close those canals, move them into the city right away so they can be maintained properly for the next 100 years. And the other side, this project isn't all secondary irrigation, right? This is also flood control and recreation. And so there's a couple trail sections that Logan City wanted to get accomplished that this project will accomplish, connecting some trail sections along Canyon Road and then another section up closer to First Dam. But the bigger project for the cities is flood control. And when people think flood control, they're thinking the river. And the river doesn't flood that many homes. And that's true. But there are about 28 homes just upstream of the Crockett Diversion that are currently in the FEMA floodplain. And just by mitigating and changing the diversion structure and being able to flow the spring floodwaters through there better, we can take most of those homes out of the floodplain. But the bigger flooding issue comes with the canals as they go north. So the canals start out going west, and then they all turn straight north, and they parallel the mountains, and they go from here to Hyde Park. And we're all built on a hill. And when it rains, all that water runs off parking lots and roads, and it used to be on fields, and it would seep in the ground. Well, now it's all hardened asphalt and concrete, and it hits the canals and starts to flow north. And these canals were built to flow irrigation water, which means they're big at the front end, and they're really small in North Logan. Well, if you're having a flooding issue, you want the opposite. You want them small at the south and big on the north. We can't do that and still use those canal systems for irrigation. So if we're able to take the irrigation water out of the canals and put those in pipes, now the canals can be modified as flood conveyance systems for those three cities. Because currently in a big rain event, especially during spring or fall when the canals are full of water, by the time those canals hit the border of Logan and enter North Logan, they're overtopping and they're flooding. Which again, when it was farmland, it wasn't that critical. You open a headgate and you flood some fields. Well, now if you open a headgate, you flood a hospital or you flood homes or you flood a church or a business, right? We can't do that. And so we're trying to mitigate those, and the canal companies and the cities work closely together to try to do that, but that's becoming harder and harder. And so the bigger expense of this project is converting those canals into flood conveyance channels. And then about 1800 north, there would be a dump for those canals, a buried pipe that would take that water out west of 10th West to Swift Slough and get it out of the city. So now the canals going north to North Logan and Hyde Park are empty during those storm events. So they have capacity again. And if you look at some of the charts in the study that shows the flood inundation during those 100-year flood events, we're going to take hundreds of acres out of the flood risk during those large flood events by putting this in place. And for the cities, aside from having that long-term water availability with their current water supply, it also gives them that flood mitigation, which for them is huge, because they're looking at, if they can't use those canals, the cities are going to spend tens, if not hundreds of millions of dollars to put in a flood conveyance system. And so this offsets that. And I'll maybe dive into a little bit of the culinary side of it. Currently, every city in the county, we rely 100% on groundwater for our culinary needs, right? Logan City has some wells and takes water out of DeWitt Springs up the canyon. Very minimal treatment is needed to send that water to your home. But they are treating it. It's going through a plant to make sure it meets standards. So currently, as a farm field develops that's using surface water, the city takes those shares and they do a change application. They convert that to groundwater and they pump more water out of the ground. That's not a long-term viable option, right? We can only take so much of our groundwater out for new growth. And as Gordon stated, if this project goes in and if we can take care of the outside needs with secondary water, we don't have to keep pumping our groundwater. We can stay pumping the same amount we are for now for decades to come. And then as the district and the cities work on conservation with residents, right, changing how much lawn area we have, changing the type of grass we're growing for our lawns, we can also have conservation on that side to need much less water on our outdoors, but still have some outdoor areas. I mean, you know, people want to have nice landscaping around their house, but they don't need to do all Kentucky bluegrass. There's other grass seed they can use. They can use native plants in those areas to reduce their water use. So we're not saying we're going to keep status quo with what's being used outside, but let's use the dirty, untreated water outside and the clean culinary water inside, so that as we do grow, we have the available water for that growth, and we're not having to use more water than we're currently using. We can actually use less and still grow the population.
Can I ask
With
a pressurized system that we're looking to put in, it also increases the opportunities for conservation type use, where you have an open channel and everything is a flooding type issue. That's 98% of our irrigation water is used in a flooding type situation, whereas when it's in a pipe, there's sprinklers are more efficient, drip systems are more efficient, and this would all be more available when it is through the irrigation type thing. I also want to mention right now too that we currently have agreements with the cities with the stormwater, so that if we get a big storm, a big summer storm, we actually shut the canal water off and allow the storm water to go through to minimize flooding and damage. And these things, if we can separate the system, both of them become more beneficial.
Let's take a break. When we come back, much more on this. So we'll ask you some more benefits of the project as you see it. And then I'll throw out you some arguments from the other side and allow you time to rebut. We're talking about a proposed major canal project proposed in Logan. Would divert water from First Dam, flow to residents in Logan, North Logan, and Hyde Park. We're talking about the Little Logan River and surrounding areas. A while back, we talked with critics of this project. You can find that episode of this program on our website, upr.org. And we're talking to proponents of the program today. We're talking with president of the Crockett Avenue Irrigation Company, Gordon Colson, and Nathan Daugs, manager of the Cache Water District. We'll have a break. Be back after this. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams, and we're talking about the Little Logan River. A major canal project is proposed in Logan. It would divert water from First Dam to flow to residents in Logan, North Logan, and Hyde Park. A while back, we talked with critics of this project. You can find that episode of the program on our website, upr.org. That's where you can find this program as well a little bit later today. Today, we're talking to proponents of this project. We're talking with Gordon Colson, president of the Crockett Avenue Irrigation Company, and Nathan Daugs, manager of the Cache Water District. So, Nathan Daugs, I'll start with you. Understand one of the benefits is proponents are proposing it, there'd be less seepage. I guess this would be in pipes now, right? And less seepage into the ground, less water lost that way.
Yeah, so the initial study that looked at the seepage in the canal systems showed that there's upwards of just over 5,000 acre feet being lost out of the canal system. Some of that water goes back into the river, the Logan River, as it seeps through some of the shallow, but a large portion of that water infiltrates into the city's sewer pipes. So those sewer pipes are not watertight, and if you go out to the sewer treatment lagoons, they can tell the day the canals turn on, and their treatment goes up by millions of gallons a day, which at the end of the year is hundreds of thousands of dollars in added cost to the residents of the cities that are paying for treatment of the sewer water. And so by putting that in a pipe, we reduce that seepage, we reduce those costs at the sewer lagoons, and we have that water available for the use of secondary or for some of the beneficial flows we're leaving in those other channels. Mm.
Gordon Colson, what I'm reading here is cities are hoping that with increased secondary water available in some of these cities, demand for culinary water would go down and hopefully less culinary water be used?
Yes. I can't tell you the percentage that there is that it would be reduced. I don't have the information with me, but they would know, you know, the difference between what you use inside your house in January in this in our area would be what you normally would use throughout the summer. The needs increase as the weather warms and we start taking care of the way we like to live here in Logan. And it's an oasis, and it's nice. That's why I stayed here. So I've lost my question.
More use of secondary water and less use of culinary water, I guess.
Yes.
What cities are hoping.
Our current service area is 16,000 acres, and that covers all the three cities and the Benson area. And if we can, about 12,000 of that has become more residential. Even the farmlands of Benson are starting to shrink with houses springing up and smaller acreage of farms and that. So it's better for our culture to be able to provide water to them without losing it.
Another argument I've heard in favor of the project, one official said a new pressurized system would allow cities to delay or eliminate other water projects that might be costly.
Yeah, so you look at Logan City's new reservoir tank they're building there on Canyon Road, and I think that's somewhere in the neighborhood of a $50 million project. They and the other cities will have to do more projects like that if residents don't have access to secondary water. That project's going to get Logan City decades down the road. But if we were to put in secondary and hook up all those residents below the canal system, it wouldn't cover all of Logan, North Logan, Hyde Park. Some people are higher than this system would cover. But if we can hook up all those residents inside that service area, that adds another 40 to 50 years on the life of that existing improvement Logan City did. And so and the estimates in this study, and again, those changes, population growth changes, but that would offset about $80 million of future infrastructure costs that will not have to be built by those three cities if this project goes in.
Any other benefits of this project that you'd like to tout? Then we'll take a break and come back and have you respond to some arguments critics of the project.
So I think, again, when I mentioned this a little earlier, but one of the big benefits is the flood mitigation aspect of it, right? As cities grow, the flooding risk to those residents increases. And if we have a good way to get those floodwaters and route them out of the city, away from the populated area, that's a big savings for those residents, because the cities are going to have to do something with the floodwater if they can't continue to use the canals as those flows get too big for the canals to handle. Because even if Crockett shuts off during a storm event, for that to be noticed in North Logan and Hyde Park is hours, right? The canal doesn't just empty because you close the headgate. It takes hours for that water to flow out. And so having that capacity for those flooding events when we get those big thunderstorms is huge for the residents of those cities. And the city managers and the city see that as a big benefit. The other one we talked about is having that access to secondary so we don't have those increased culinary needs. But the other big benefit is the environmental benefits to the Logan River itself. So if you go to Crockett Diversion today, there's probably about 6, maybe 8 CFS passing Crockett Diversion for some other water rights that are below that. That is not enough to meet the environmental beneficial needs of the Logan River as a cold water fishery. This project will ensure that on top of that 6 to 8 in a low water year like this, there's an additional 25 CFS in the Logan River for the entirety. It's about 13 miles. So that 13-mile stretch is now going to be floatable for recreation, which it currently is not. And it's going to meet the environmental beneficial needs of a cold water fishery for that entire stretch. So that's a huge benefit. And while we will still maintain the public benefits of the Little Logan through those public parks and fairgrounds to have access to their summer cooling, playing areas that they have there. So while it's not a project that everyone thinks is a win for everybody, we've tried to incorporate as many aspects as we could to try to make it a win for most of the population, right? Because doing nothing for the canal companies is not an option. They need to rebuild that headgate. That headgate is old. And if we don't pressurize the whole system, there's areas of the canals that are going to have to be piped for safety issues and to ease that maintenance. And there's other areas that we may have to go through people's backyards with equipment and start removing trees and be able to clean and maintain those. If that's going to be the flood control and the stormwater, those canals are still going to be changed to be able to manage and handle the water that's going to come their way. And so doing nothing is really not an option. And when we think this shows that this is probably the best overall option. While it's not perfect, we think it's a pretty good compromise.
Anything you'd like to add at this point?
Yeah, one benefit that hasn't really been mentioned and it affects a lot of people is the sump pumps in their basement. Part of the increase of the cities into the city's sewer lines comes from people. The water first comes to someone's basement and then it's pumped from there. In the past, it's been able to be pumped into the sewer system, but the sewer system has changed, and it costs just as much to, as Nate mentioned earlier, that it costs just as much to clean water that's 30% dirty rather than 80% dirty. So, you know, with their people's basements would be drier. That's a benefit that comes along with it. Another benefit is actually the secondary water is better for the plants than, I call it live water, with all the enzymes and everything that comes naturally in the water. It's more beneficial for growth for plants and flowers and grass and that rather than the treated water, the culinary water. Culinary water is better for us people, but it's the plants do better, and you can actually use less water, less secondary water than you can do there. And it's also going to be, we're doing our best to make it more economical than culinary water as well. Those rates are going to rise. We know they're going to rise. We're trying to keep our secondary water as economical as possible, and it should be costing less for the secondary water than the culinary.
Let's take another break. We'll come back with a final segment on this topic, a project that would affect the Little Logan River, a canal project proposed in Logan. And we're talking with proponents today. We have an episode up with critics. That's on our website, upr.org. That's where this episode will live as well. Gordon Coulson, president of Crockett Avenue Irrigation Company, is with us. Nathan Daugs, manager of the Cache Water District, is with us as well. More following this break. You're listening to Access Utah. I'm Tom Williams. We're talking about the Little Logan River. There's a major canal project proposed in Logan that would divert water from First Dam to flow to residents in Logan, North Logan, and Hyde Park. Proponents of the project say the current system is not efficient enough getting water to those towns. Critics are worried that diverting water would diminish the Little Logan River, and it would be better to let water flow on to the Bear River and ultimately the Great Salt Lake. We're talking about it. We have an episode of the program we did earlier, a couple of months ago, with critics of the project. That's at upr.org. And today we're talking with project proponents. Gordon Coulson, president of Crockett Avenue Irrigation Company, is with us, and Nathan Daugs, manager of Cache Water District, with us as well. So, gentlemen, I want to throw you some arguments from the other side and have you respond to those. Nathan Daugs, we treated this quite a bit at the beginning of the program, but I'm quoting a gentleman who lives near the Little Logan River, quoted in the Salt Lake Tribune. He says he worries that the main part of the Little Logan River might be slowed to a trickle. You said right now 50, 60-ish CFS, and estimated with at the end of this project down to about 10 CFS. Possibility it could go dry, I suppose, right, that main channel. So 10 CFS, what would that look like?
So it depends on where in the channel you're talking about. So the early portions or the east portions of the Little Logan, going from 50 to 10, that's going to be a noticeable difference. And one thing to look at is in the wintertime. So this last winter, there's about 300 yards of the Little Logan that flow year-round, and then they spill back in the Logan River. And during low winter flows, there's 3 to 5 CFS going through that section. So that gives, you know, if the public want to go look at that in the wintertime, that would give them an idea of what a real low flow would look like. Even under current scenarios, we wouldn't be down to that 3 CFS through that area. We'd probably be closer to the 5. But if you go to Merlin Olson Park today, there's 5 CFS flowing through Merlin Olson Park. So there would be, and that's pretty average. 5 to 8 is kind of the average through Merlin Olson Park most summers. So when we're flowing 10, Merlin Olson Park would actually see an increase in flow. The fairgrounds, kind of the end where people really play in it for the most part, is flowing 9 CFS today, and then 6 of that is diverted. 6.5 is diverted by a canal company. So there's roughly 2.5 staying in the Little Logan Channel to the confluence with Logan River. And so most years, again, you wouldn't notice much of a difference in that stretch of it. And for it to go all the way dry, we would have to see a worse drought than we've ever seen yet in history, right? Some are saying that 1 out of 4 years it would go dry, and I don't know what they're relying on that, because there's never been a case when the Kimball Decree has said you can't divert any water, and this water would be regulated under the Kimball Decree, which regulates the Logan River diversions. And so far we've never had a drought bad enough where they would say you can't divert any of that 10 CFS. Mm-hmm.
Gordon Colson, here's another argument you're hearing from the other side in this, critics of this project. Some are saying that all well and good to provide secondary water to some of these towns for, you know, lawns and gardens and et cetera. But shouldn't we be concerned about Great Salt Lake? Shouldn't we privilege as much water as we possibly can to flow into the Bear River and onto the Great Salt Lake?
That's a two-sided argument there, you know, issue. Yes, it's important for the Great Salt Lake there, but it's also, I'm speaking for myself. Maybe I'm a little bit selfish, but I want to take care of myself before I can help anyone else. But also, with the conservation methods that become more available to more of the citizens of these cities and areas of our service area, we think that we would quite possibly be able to send more water. We don't know until it all comes about as to what the total possibility is, because it's the seepage losses, how much of that would disappear and how much it shows, you know, how much of it would just change. We're all concerned citizens of more than just our, more than the city and more than our yard. We're concerned about the state as well. And if we can do our part, we will. That's one of the things with this Little Logan issue that's come up, is that we're doing everything that we possibly can to keep things as they are today. Sometimes the critics of the project, they come up with mapping and that kind of thing of the 1880s, 1860s, and that. Would you rather live now, or would you rather live like you did in the 1860s? Because that's the difference. That's the difference as the culture has changed and that. But as we're right now, we want to do everything that we can to hold it the way things are for the next 100 years.
Nathan Dougs, I wonder anything you'd like to add on this particular question.
Yeah, so the Great Salt Lake issue is a complicated one. And just saying that we should not do this project, and that these 10 canal companies that have water rights should just give up their water and let it stay in the river is probably not a realistic option, right? There's still thousands of acres of farmland irrigated with this water. Much of that farmland grows crops that feed dairy cows, and that milk goes to Gosner's or Schreiber's or Cache Valley Cheese and stays in the valley, so we have a local food supply. We want to protect that local food supply as long as possible. And it's also not as easy just saying we're just going to leave it in the river, because then the next diversion down the river can take it under Utah water law. And if we put this project in, the canal companies would have the option, and now the management possibilities that they don't have now. Let's say those 5,000 acre feet that are being lost to seepage, we can show that those can be captured and are not needed most years in this system. Those canal companies could then do a change application, a temporary change application, and show that they are dedicating that 5,000 acre feet to the Great Salt Lake. And now the state engineer would have to make sure that water passes all those other diversions and gets to the Great Salt Lake. And 5,000 acre feet sounds like a lot of water. And for us in Cache Valley, that is a lot of water. We can do a lot with that. For the Great Salt Lake, that's about 2 days worth of evaporation. So the Great Salt Lake evaporates between 2 and 3 million acre feet a year. We use a couple hundred thousand acre feet in all of Cache Valley on all our farmland. And so it's good to look at the perspective and what this project could or couldn't do to save the Great Salt Lake. While it can be a piece of a really big puzzle, it's a really small piece. But without being able to manage that water in a more efficient and effective way, those canal companies really don't have the option to lease water to the Great Salt Lake because they need to divert every bit they can to meet the needs of all their shareholders. So their shareholders would have to vote to dedicate that water to the Great Salt Lake. Gordon can't just say, oh, we're going to put this project in or we're going to dedicate water. You got to get all those canal companies. They're the ones that have the water right. The district can't say they're going to lease it to the Great Salt Lake. Gordon and Crockett Distribution Company can. It's those individual canal companies that have those water rights.
Gordon Goldson, I'm reading here that your company has plans to discuss potentially leasing water to the Great Salt Lake.
Yes, that's actually a newer possibility that's come from the state with us, and it's becoming more popular with the shareholders and canal companies, and a lot of it is because when these leasing programs first came out, it would have been, if we leased an amount of water to the Great Salt Lake, then it was up to the canal company to make sure that it got all the way down through. And, there are another two, probably, I'm not sure, but my estimate is 200 canal companies between us and the Great Salt Lake. And to make sure that our share got all the way down through there, it would not be economic. We'd spend more money making sure it got there than now. But with the state taking on that responsibility, we'll say, we're sending so much here at the head, and it's up to you to shepherd it all the way down through. And that's a much better way to do it. And these things the leasing will also help keep down the cost of our, because if we don't need it all, we're willing to share it. And the costs that we can, then the state is willing to buy it, and then that's a win for many more entities.
Just a couple more minutes here, Nathan Daugs, on cost. So projected to the plan to cost $310 million, 90% of that funded through the USDA if this approved. But 10%, I guess that would be picked up by the cities, I guess. So there is a cost. And talk about water rates, estimated to go up, at least in the near term.
So the cost would not necessarily be absorbed by the city. So the majority of that cost would be a loan taken out by the entity that's going to operate that secondary irrigation system. And then that loan would be paid back by user fees throughout the life of the loan. So the average resident in the cities isn't going to see a tax increase to pay for this. The users that hook up to it are the ones that would pay for it off their monthly water bill for getting that access to secondary water. That's a big number. But we look at some of those other numbers of doing future water infrastructure for culinary needs. That's where we see that benefit of still doing the project, because some of the hard numbers to see the benefit is again, those flood control measures to protect properties from flooding damage. And so that's all incorporated into that cost for part of that. But water rates, I think, are going to go up regardless if this project goes in or not, right? Cities have increased costs to maintain systems. Some cities have older water systems than others, and so those costs will go up at different rates. But I think, any service that's being provided, whether it's gas, electricity, water, those all go up over time because it takes money to keep those services provided to homes. And so we think with this project, we can maintain those water rates lower and more manageable by having access to secondary water on one side And then the culinary from the cities, they're not going to have to do as many improvements, so those culinary rates aren't going to have to go up as quick as they would without a project like this.
Well, finally, just in the minute remaining, our previous program, we talked to critics of this project, gave them an opportunity to do an action item. What if people are listening to this and agree with you gentlemen that this project should go forward, what would you have them do?
So at this point, your last episode was aired right before the deadline for the public comment period. So it would have been nice to have this episode before that also. Their really only option for input now, if they think this is a good project, is one, to contact their city, their mayor, or their council member, saying, yeah, we support this. We think it's good for our community, as those cities are still going to be, you know, working towards implementing this project over the next number of years. I'm happy to have them reach out to me at the Water District, or if they have questions about the project, happy to meet with anybody and answer questions for or against the project as we continue to move this project forward. The process right now is the draft EIS. We've received comments from that second comment period. We're incorporating those into the document, addressing those comments. That will then get turned in to NRCS, Natural Resources Conservation Service. And then the Logan River Watershed Project will be sent to National for their final review, and hopefully have a record of decision by the end of the year.
Anything on that, Gordon Colson, what would you like people to do? They could reach out to the irrigation company, I guess. I don't know what you...
Yes, it'd probably reach out through me would be the closest contact. And one thing that would be most beneficial is for everyone to be willing to listen to the whole story, because I think there's a lot of misinformation out on both sides. And it's because there's no short explanation or answer to most of the questions. If it's a yes or no, there's always a condition of why it's the way it is and why this would be that it is. And to be able to listen and hear and accept, you know, we accept the challenge of keeping the Little Logan as it is for as long as we possibly can. And as long as those that are opponents of the changing things in the Little Logan, if they would be unwilling to accept and understand our limitations that we have, and doing that, we can work together. We can benefit both of us.
All right, we'll leave it there. Thanks for coming in. Gordon Colson's been with us, president of the Crockett Avenue Irrigation Company. Thanks.
Thanks for the invite.
Nathan Dowigs, manager of the Cache Water District. Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
And to listeners, these two episodes, pro and con, will be up linked to each other, so you can get a kind of a full, I guess, a full range of opinions on this. And we thank our guests today for coming in and getting the proponent's side, and we thank you for listening to Access Utah.